So hi everybody, and happy golly gee whiz first Wednesday in July. I just a moment ago, while Cheryl was talking, realized that my calendar was still in June and I better flip it. And I have this lovely, lovely calendar. It's baby animals. And so it's really fun to flip it, you know, because baby animals are just so dang cute, aren't they? And it looks like what I have here are a couple of baby, it says they're grizzly bears, but they're so tiny. They must be very, very young, and they're just as cute as can be. But even as baby grizzly bears, you can see those claws look very, very sharp. It looks like if even if they were playing with you, they could accidentally, you know, just slice your skin like razor blades. So I would imagine a baby grizzly bear is something you still want to be very careful around. But welcome to the Guiding Light, and we're looking at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And before we get started today, I am going to play a song. My focus today with the Gentle Healing Group, because remember I'm one day ahead of you, my focus today has really developed into just complete surrender. You know, a deeper level of surrender than I've achieved before, just going even deeper with the surrender. And so because this is where I am at today, the song that I have selected to play is a John Denver classic called Sweet Surrender. So let's listen to John Denver.
Lost and alone on some forgotten highway, traveled by many, remembered by few. Looking for something that I can believe in, looking for something that I'd like to do with my life. There's nothing behind me and nothing that ties me to something that might have been true yesterday. Tomorrow is open. Right now it seems to be more than enough to just be here today. And I don't know what the future is holding in store. I don't know where I'm going. I'm not sure where I've been. There's a spirit that guides me, a light that shines for me. My life is worth living. I don't need to see the end. Sweet, sweet surrender. Looking for something that I can believe in. Looking for something that I'd like to do with my life. There's nothing behind me and nothing that ties me to something that might have been true yesterday. Tomorrow is open. Right now it seems to be more than enough to just be here today. I don't know what the future is holding in store. I don't know where
All right. Wonderful song. I love, you know, when he talks about how nothing, I can't remember the exact words, but the idea is he's not bound today by anything that may have been true yesterday. I just think that's just perfect, right? All right, so we are here for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, and we are on page 4, just moving right along. So question number 4 at the top of page 4 is this. When will the realization of the true self be gained? And the answer that is given is when the world, which is what is seen, has been removed, there will be realization of the true self, which is the seer. When the world, which is what is seen, has been removed, there will be realization of the true self, which is the seer. So there's actually an audio that I've listened to several times today. And it's actually a part of the tip for tomorrow's workbook lesson. But I think it's also the perfect thing to listen to as we contemplate this answer. Again, the answer is saying that the true self is realized when the world, which is seen, has been removed. And so this audio that we are going to listen to is someone describing that experience. Now, by coincidence or divine miracle, however you want to look at it, this morning when I woke up, my eyes felt exceptionally heavy. Like usually I wake up pretty easily as long as the sun is up. And the sun's up, you know, just a little after 5 nowadays. So I get up pretty easily. And so even though the sun was up, my eyes felt quite heavy. And I had the thought, I need something to help me wake up. And as soon as I had that thought, then the thought came in or the feeling came in to turn on Awakening Together Radio and listen to it. And so this audio that I'm about to play was on Awakening Together Radio. I had never heard of this particular teacher before. In fact, right this moment, I'm having trouble remembering his name. I may have to... I'd never heard of this teacher. Oh, you know what? I have it on my phone because I was listening to it while I was walking Jamie today. So let me get his name and then I can look it up on my computer and play it for you. But I had never heard of this particular teacher before. So he was completely outside of my awareness. His name is Steve Ford. And so I just heard it by, you know, like I said, grace or accident or miracle, whatever you want to call it. I heard it this morning when I said, I need something to help me wake up. And I have since listened to this portion that I'm going to play for you probably 5 times today. Now, I've listened to the entire audio almost once. It looks like I'm probably about 20 minutes short of listening to the entire audio. But this one portion that I'm going to play for you, I have listened to, you know, probably at least 5 times today. Let me get back to where it begins. Right along here is a good place to play it. I'm going to start playing it a little bit before the experience that I want to share with you, because I want you just to get a little bit of the context around which this experience came. Yeah, his name is Steve Ford. But the reason I'm playing it is because I think it is directly related to what Ramana Maharshi is saying here. When will the realization of the true self be gained? And he says, when the world, which is what is seen, has been removed, there will be realization of the true self, which is the seer. What we're going to hear is we're going to hear Steve Ford describe his awakening experience. And what you're going to hear is in the experience... the world is not in his vision. The world is taken away. And it's in this experience of the world being taken away, which he calls the void, that he becomes very, very clear on the true self. And so it's exactly what Ramana Maharshi says. You know, when what is seen has been removed, there will be realization of the true self, which is the seer. So let's have a listen to Steve Ford. We'll probably be listening for about 15 minutes. Let me know if you need a change in the volume. Hold on, I'm going to turn my mic towards the speaker. I don't know if that will make noise for you, but there we go. We're done. Hopefully that didn't hurt your ears. And here we go.
And I'd come to understand all the principles. I'd come to apply
them. He's
talking
about the 12 steps.
But I'd apply them from a mental basis in relation to a prescribed program.
An alcoholic or a drunk, as he described himself.
Now, between these two places, there was no Steve, you see. Now, I can say this looking back, because I've had to reverse engineer all of this to understand, because the awakening changed everything completely. Once it happened, I thought, what just happened? Even though, I'll get to that in a minute, but anyway. So I thought, oh right, I've not handed over my will. And of course, Sheila Jervis, the tutor, the wonderful sociology teacher, came into my mind again, and I thought, of course, I'm not my thoughts and my feelings, and I've not handed over my will in my life. I've not let go of the perceptual field of reality. I'm still hanging on to it, managing it, trying to create a better perceptual field or whatever, going to better Steve. And I just absolutely realized in that moment that I've got to let go of it. I've got to let go of this. It was the only thing left to do. I tried everything. 3.5 years, I've been working this program, working the inside of it and the outside of it and applying it and understanding everything, you know. And suddenly I just found myself in the middle of the floor, on my knees, as if in front of God, you know. And I knew that I had to hand over the mind and my feelings. And I had no idea what would happen, you see. I hadn't been doing meditations to transcend the mind or to have the perfect emotional insight to things or whatever. You know, I had no idea of how to transcend or anything or what would happen. I really had no idea. So I found myself just in the moment thinking, okay, because of the fear of going to drink again or what have you, it really was, okay, here I am. I will just give all of this to you now. All of this to you now. So on my knees on the floor, I consented to let go of my thinking. Now, this is something you can't just go and do. This is something, again, to do with timing, to do with pressure, to do with, in that moment, what was going on inside of me, what was going on. I mean, I was falling apart. There was absolutely no sense of authenticity. I knew that if something didn't was going to work, I was going to drink again. For me, I just thought, then, okay, I'll let go of my thinking. And for some strange reason, it worked. I have no idea why it worked. I could tell you now, Rick, or tell someone else, go get on your knees now and hand over your thinking. It will just go away and you'll be fine. You know, it doesn't work that way, does it? Because then the ego comes and says, right, I'm going to get it now.
Yeah. What direction were you facing?
What had you had for breakfast?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's when I said in the beginning that I thought yours was one of the more remarkable awakening stories I'd heard. That's kind of what I was referring to there, is that, you know, there was this perfect sort of confluence of everything you had been through and your sense of desperation at that point and, you know, the kind of realization that you had to surrender your volition to some greater power. And it all just came together and it actually happened, you know.
Yeah, it did. And the bed of that happening was my utter powerlessness and helplessness. I, from the age of 18, I realized that my life had been a lie. In my endeavor to create a recovery, that didn't deal with that lie. You know, I still remained dishonest, not knowing who I was in terms of identity. And now, at the age of 31, all these years after being 18, it just felt, I cannot do this anymore. This is it. I'm on my knees. I said, okay. So I put my hands, naturally came down. I don't know if that's an important detail. My hands came down. I stood there with nothing, and I prayed to God because I was a Christian. I'm still, I'm not Christian as in identity, but at that time, the understanding I had of spirituality came through Christianity. Mm-hmm. And so I stood before God, which to me was never a guy with a grey beard or a big stick on a cloud. God to me was always an omnipresent sort of reality, whatever. And I that evening, I just, with the true intention, handed over my thinking, and there was in a prayer position, and there was a point where, as I let go, there was a slight sense of sadness, a slight sense of disappointment that I had with myself, having to give the Creator my thinking back, because it felt like I'd done nothing with it. I felt very sad. I felt, I'm sorry, but take the thinking back, because of me, I've not.
Hold on one moment.
A point where I'm
not sure what happened there. Let me just rewind a little bit.
I get it. Lie. You know, I still remained dishonest, not knowing who I was in terms of identity.
We'll hear a little bit again.
At the age of 31, all these years after being 18, it just. Just felt, I cannot do this anymore. This is it. I'm on my knees. I said, okay. So I put my hands naturally came down. I don't know if that's an important detail. My hands came down. I stood there with nothing, and I prayed to God because I was a Christian. I'm still, I'm not Christian as in identity, but at that time, the understanding I had of spirituality came through Christianity. Mm-hmm. And so I stood before God, which to me was never a guy with a grey beard or a big stick on a cloud. God to me was always an omnipresent sort of reality, whatever. And I that evening I just with the true intention handed over my thinking, and there was a prayer position, and there was a point where, as I let go, there was a slight sense of sadness, a slight sense of disappointment that I had with myself, having to give the Creator my thinking back, because it felt like I'd done nothing with it. I felt very sad. I felt, I'm sorry, but take the thinking back, because of me, I've not done much good with this. You know, and I felt I disappointed God. In fact, that was one of the big things in my drinking, was I really disappointed God, you know. And so at that point, the mind began to open. It was at a point where I'd let go of the tension of identification. Now, I didn't know this at the time, but what I did was I just totally did not identify anymore with the mind, because I knew the mind was not real. Sheila Jervis had told me that, you see, and I totally believe that. It's as simple as that. And at that point of knowing it's not real, it was still the scariest thing to let go of, right? So letting go of that, I felt where I disidentified with it, where I let go of the attachment to it as a reality principle, it started just to open, because the mind, when you're attached to it, becomes contracted. You know, it's like an energy, a tight contraction. And of course, where I was no longer attached to it, just began to open up. And as it opened up, it went beyond the coordinate that I'd set on it, you see, which is the egoic mark, isn't it? The control you have on the mind is, you know, the contraction, the idea you have. And so as it started to open, it went beyond the idea of who I thought I was in the mental construct. And so it started to go beyond the mental construct of who I thought I was. And there was a fear. There was a fear of, that was going to happen here. But I was so broken, absolutely broken, that I just stayed with it. I just thought, okay, well,
ride this out.
Let's just do it, you know. Yeah. And it dissipated, and it was like, I describe it as birds flying out of a tree, a flock of birds suddenly, push, you know, when you shoot a gun, you know, and all of a tush, because I... And it felt like my thoughts just dissipated. All the thoughts in my mind just flew away like a flock of birds. And just at that point, there was this opening. Just the mind opened up, the thoughts went, and suddenly the mind just became this blank screen. And there was this perfect observation of blank screen. And I remember, for the first time in my life, coming to know peace of mind. I'd never known peace of mind before. I'd heard people say it, and I may have even at times thought I'd felt it, or sensed it, should I say, not felt it, sensed it. But there was peace of mind, and it was like, you know when they say the mind is the sky and the thoughts are clouds? It really is. That's exactly how it was. Suddenly there was this infinite sky of mind, which became, it's like a projection screen, but what is observing that is this pure awareness, this pure consciousness. And at that point, I realized, I'm not mad, you know, I'm not dead, I've not disappeared. I am observing this. And I'm observing from this, I couldn't have said this at the time, but now, from this undifferentiated awareness and the mind there, and suddenly the mind became the perfect reflection of what was observing, which was nothing, emptiness, you see. This happened. And I was, I didn't have time, there was no thinking, okay. So, at that point, I remember suddenly being pulled into a deeper idea, okay, a deeper idea, which was an emotional idea. You see, because we have layers of thought, you see. We have the thought that is very abstract. We have the thought that is emotional. And we have the thought that is very physical, the body, you see. Now, I didn't know this then, but this is what happened. So, suddenly, there was a pull to a deeper aspect of contraction within my body. You see, the mind opened up. Suddenly, there was nothing keeping me from entering into what I call the heart area, yeah. And then suddenly there was a pull, and I felt myself as formless consciousness coming down into this area, into my heart area. And as I was going down, I wasn't expecting that, but I just stayed with formless consciousness. There was no there was no egoic I anymore, no mental construct of doership anymore. So there was just I'm going into my heart, you know. And suddenly, as I'm going into the heart is now, where there's no contraction set on the heart, the ego setting the contraction, keeping it in its emotionally contracted identity of Steve on an emotional level, suddenly that starts to imitate pure consciousness. And so suddenly the heart begins to open because I'm not doing anything with it. And as it begins to open, there's a pain. There was a pain, but it was a clean pain. A pain where there's no suffering. It was because suffering is in the mind, you see. It's the mental attachment you have with things. Suddenly, as my heart was opening, I felt this pain, and as I felt this pain, it was like the pain of the world. I know, I'm putting it on a biblical scale now. It was the pain of the world, you know. And, And there's this pain, and this kind of voice not came from nowhere. It was like a voice from within this just said, you've been running away from this all your life. And I understood then. I understood. I've been running away from my heart opening. You know, I've been remained in what I knew all my life, you see. Suddenly, I'm going beyond what I knew. You see, I've done that now mentally, but now with the mind, but now on this level, the emotional level, this is on a much deeper level. The attachment, the emotional attachment we have to things is much deeper and is much stronger, you see. And so as it began to open, it said, this is what you've been running away from all your life. And then it opened up, and all there was a void. There was going beyond the emotional contraction of my identity. There was just this absolute void. It was absolutely black. And I'm, you know, I don't want to appear too dramatic, or I don't want to frighten anyone. But for me, I then was facing this very dark void. And this void was pulling me in. And as I was being pulled into this vortex, this void, there was another voice came in. It said, you'll either go mad or you'll die. And I consented. I said, okay. I consented, okay. Not verbally, but in my innermost.
Intentionally,
I said, okay. And I was pulled into this vortex, this very dark vortex. And as I got pulled in, it just felt like the whole thing opened up. And as I got pulled in, there was a point where I truly did not exist. But for no time, it was like a boom, boom, you know, it was, I got pulled in. As soon as I got pulled in, I could then see from, if you understand. Mm-hmm. I could see from. And at that point, there was a point of absolute death, complete death, of attachments. There was no attachment anymore to the mental structure, the emotional structure. So much so that everything had opened up and it truly reflected what was directly observing. And the void was in fact a reflection of the absolute. I got sucked into it, and then I came to it. I could see, basically. I could see, and I could see from a completely, completely different reality base to what I was before, totally.
All right, so I'll stop it there. But what's interesting is he talks about how he, you know, was being pulled in. First there was this awakening of the mind, this opening of the mind. And then, you know, he continued to go with it, and it went beyond that to this awakening of the heart, the opening of the heart. And when he went through the heart, which I think of as the eye of the needle, right? When he went through the heart, he came to the void. At this point, there was no world. And in fact, at the end of his description, he says, I came to, right? And then I could see. But at this point, when he says it was pure black. There was no world. And it was in this void or this pure blackness, this no worldness, this no formness. He says, I could see from. In other words, the absolute, the self, was realized when there was no world. And then what's interesting is when this awakening experience ended, he did come back to seeing form. But of course now, as he says, he sees from a perspective, a basis of reality that is entirely different than before. So, again, the Ramana Maharshi question that led me to replay that, when will the realization of the self be gained? When the world, which is what is seen, has been removed, there will be realization of the true self, which is the seer, right? And that was his experience. So, you know, once I was pulled into the void, then I could see from. Right? That's the word he uses, I could see from. So he became aware of the seer, the self, which is the seer. So, you know, this experience happened to him. And again, tomorrow, if you're a part of the Gentle Healing Group, tomorrow, when you are on lesson 168, I believe it is, I've actually transcribed this into the tip. So tomorrow you'll be able to read this transcription, as well as I put a link to the video. I put the video right in the tip. So if you want to watch more of the video, you can do that. But what's really interesting about his experience is, in a way, it happened spontaneously, and in a way, it didn't, because it happened for him in a moment of just complete desperation, complete awareness. I can never do this myself. You know, he had been trying to manage his life, like we all do, had been trying to manage his life, and you know, where his own best efforts got him first were, you know, he became a drunk, as he describes it. He became a drunk. And then, of course, he went through 12 steps, and he says that he really worked the 12 steps. You know, I imagine when he says that, I kind of think of how I really worked the Course in Miracles workbook. I think it's about the same. He really worked the 12 steps. But yet, you know, things continued to happen. In fact, the last thing that happened is he was going to college, and he was in, I think, a psychology class, and he was really, really interested in the psychology or the philosophy, whatever it was. And afterwards he was talking to the teacher, and he says he was just talking and talking and talking away. Everybody else had left the room. And the teacher says to him, "You're not your thoughts or your emotions." And something in him was more ready to hear that than the average mind is, because that's what caused everything to kind of explode. And it actually took him into a state of desperation, because he realized he had always been trying to manage his life by managing his thoughts and his emotions. And if he wasn't his thoughts and his emotions, then he had no basis anymore, no foundation anymore for managing his life. And it really threw him into a feeling of desperation, a desperate tailspin. Everything just, it's like the foundation just crumbled. And that's what led him to fall to his knees and turn his thinking over to God. And in fact, you heard him say there was even a bit of, he said, disappointment or sadness. And although he didn't use the word shame, it almost sounded like there may have been a bit of shame. Like, you know, I didn't do a very good job of my thinking. You know, like I was a total failure with thinking. You know, take it back. You know, I'm sorry. So he was completely done with it. He just felt like he was a total failure with thinking. And it was that turning it over and being so done with it that initiated this experience. And again, this experience was it sounds to me like a genuine awakening experience, where he was, first the mind opened and all of thought disappeared and there was a completely silent, clear mind. And then the heart opened and he was pulled into the heart and he felt the pain of the world. And he moved through the pain of the world into the void. And then, it sounds like what we would call the voice of the Holy Spirit showed up first and said, "This is what you've been running from all of your life," right? This opening of the heart. As he started to get sucked into the void, it almost sounds like it was the voice of the ego trying to stop him that came in next, because the voice that came in next said something like, "You know, if you continue, you'll either go mad or die." And he was like, he says, "Okay." You know, like he was willing to continue. He didn't have any willpower to stop this from happening. And so he continued to be pulled completely in until, again, the world completely disappeared. There was nothing but blackness. And he says, and then I could see from, right? Self-realization had occurred. So what's really interesting is before he tells this experience, Rick Archer and he are joking about how, you know, you can't just tell people, you know, go down on your knees and give up your thoughts and everything will be fine, because he says it's really about the timing. It's about everything that was happening in me. You know, we could say it was about how desperate he was. He also comments about how, you know, other than 12 steps, he had no spiritual preparation. And so he didn't know about, schools of enlightenment where they teach you things like what awareness is and how to just be present and watch whatever's happening inside of you. He didn't know that. But what I thought was interesting when I listened to him say that is he didn't say that wouldn't be useful. He just said he didn't know that. This all just happened to him, right? But he didn't say he didn't think it was useful. What's occurred to me as I listened to him now probably about 6 times today, what's occurred to me is that, you know, desperation is certainly one way to go about this. We know that awakening has come through desperation more than once. Eckhart Tolle was about to commit suicide when his awakening occurred. Byron Katie was extremely desperate when her awakening occurred. To me, it sounds foolish if desperation isn't present. It sounds foolish to try and put myself into a desperate place. It doesn't sound at all wise to me. So although desperation appears to be one way awakening happens, it can't be my way. Because I'm already on a path of awakening. He wasn't. Eckhart Tolle really wasn't. Byron Katie may not have been, although I once heard her say she was meditating. I am already on a path. I'm already on a path of inquiry and meditation and contemplation. I also remember when I started this spiritual path that I had a request, even I call it a commitment. And the commitment was to awaken through joy. So there has to be a path other than desperation. And so as I've been contemplating this today, again, you know, I pay close attention to what is in this man's description. And I hear things that happened to him and that he was willing for in his desperation, so he allowed them to happen. But they are things that we, I don't know if emulate is the right word. I'll use that word when I take the time to look it up. They are things that we emulate in our practice. When we are practicing the little s self-inquiry, or what I sometimes call the false self-inquiry, we are looking at the thoughts and seeing they are not me. I am not my thoughts. When we are practicing rest, accept, and trust, we're allowing the emotions to be, but we're noticing they are not me. I am not my emotions. And when we're practicing awareness, watching awareness, we're noticing that is me. And I think we've heard other teachers who did not take the path of desperation, who took the path of spiritual practice, which seems to be the path that we are on. And these teachers talk about how their spiritual practice led them to the point where the awakening occurred. So for me, listening to this experience, even though, again, his was the path of desperation and mine is the path of joy, it was very, very motivating to increase my willingness to just completely let go of the thinking and completely focus on awareness. It feels like that is the path for me. And there's this trust that's always been there, but you know how things increase? So it's increased again today. There is this trust that through the practices of little s self-inquiry and capital S self-inquiry, through the practices of questioning the thoughts, allowing the emotions, observing them, and practicing awareness, watching awareness, that this opening that happened to him in desperation will occur. And in my case, when it does, there will be both a readiness, but there will also be the spiritual training there to allow that experience to complete itself, just as Steve Ford was able to allow that experience to complete itself. I have heard stories from people who have experienced this opening, but they ran from it and it closed. So what I really feel that we are doing is we are preparing ourselves so that when this experience comes to us, we can allow ourselves to go through it, even though we may not be feeling desperation. It's a different kind of preparedness, right? As he called it, schools of enlightenment. Another thing that I think is really important, and he and Rick Archer also discussed this in the video, if you listen to the entire video. Another thing that I think is really important is, you know, we all experience awareness. You know, we couldn't experience anything if we were not aware. So with even the slightest attention on the fact that we're aware, we all know that we are aware. But this awareness that we're experiencing is not the full impact of the Absolute. Ramana Maharshi often describes it as the light of the moon instead of the light of the sun. And of course, the light of the moon, remember, is merely the sunlight reflecting off of the moon. But the light of the moon is still not the sun itself, even though it comes from the sun. It is not the sun itself. It's much, much dimmer, right? Much dimmer than the sun itself. So what happens in today's world is, with so many people talking about awareness as what we are, people want to very quickly claim awakening. They want to say, oh, awareness, I know what awareness is, and you know, I'm aware, and I'm always aware, and claim awakening, when they haven't actually traveled through this eye of the needle experience and got to this point where the world disappeared and the self was realized. You know, these claims of oh, I know what awareness is, I'm awake all the time, are happening when the world has never, ever disappeared. The world has always been present. The identity with the self and the identity with the mind is still here. And I just think that we don't have to fool ourselves that way, not even under peer pressure to claim awakening. I think we can wait for the genuine thing. And so, again, Ramana Maharshi says, when will the realization of the self be gained? And the answer is, when the world, which is what is seen, has been removed, there will be realization of the self, which is the seer. And we just heard Steve Ford describe that incredibly perfectly, I think. I think it was a perfect illustration. Now, the next question, number 5, listen to this. Will there not be realization of the self even while the world is there? Ramana Maharshi's answer, there will not be. I mean, I think that that's pretty dang clear. And as Kathy says, what a drag to fake awakening. Yeah. But I think this is pretty dang clear. And I think that if we have been through an experience where the world went away, we experienced the void and knew ourselves as seen from, knew ourselves as the Absolute, we'll know that, right? And if that has not occurred, we know that too. And we don't need to fool ourselves, even under spiritual peer pressure, to claim some type of awakening. Will there not be realization of the self even while the world is there? There will not be, he says. Why? The questioner asks. The seer and the object seen are like the rope and the snake. Just as the knowledge of the rope, which is the substrata, will not arise unless the false knowledge of the illusory serpent goes, so the realization of the true self, which is the substrata, will not be gained unless the belief that the world is real is removed. So, I mean, you know, I live here in the land of snakes. And I've gotten pretty good at telling the difference between a snake and a stick. But actually, believe it or not, that takes training. Or he's using the example of a rope. More frequently than ropes, we run across sticks here that, you know, are kind of curvy. And you know, and they can have the appearance of a snake. And I've got a very keen trained eye, because we have enough snakes here, and it is important, you know, to avoid them, especially if they're rattlesnakes. I've got a trained, keen eye, and I can now really tell the difference between a stick and a snake at a distance. But when I first moved here, I didn't have that keen eye yet, because I'd never been around a place where I needed to be so well trained. And when you see a stick and you think it's a snake, you react as if it's a snake. Right? You just do. Only when, you know, you get close enough or whatever happens so that you can see, oh, it's not a snake, it's a stick, only then is there actual realization of truth. Until the moment that you see it's a stick, it is a snake and you are acting like it's a snake. And so this is what he is saying about us, that until we get to that point where the image of the world is taken away, we naturally still have belief in the world. We still have belief in it because we still see it, just like you still see the snake and the stick, or in his example, the snake and the rope. And so we are still acting as if it is real. Now, to some degree, we are practicing detachment. To some degree, we are practicing letting go. This is a part of our spiritual training. But it is not complete. And it cannot be complete until the image that we are looking at disappears long enough for us to realize the self, and therefore for us to realize that the world is not real in a very genuine way. So going on to the next question, question number 7. When will the world, which is the object seen, be removed? Ramana Maharshi's answer: when the mind, which is the cause of all cognitions and of all actions, becomes quiet, the world will disappear. Now that's very interesting because we just heard Steve Ford describe that. Steve Ford described that the first thing that happened, remember, was what he called the opening of the mind, or we might call it the awakening of the mind. And he says that when the mind opened, he says his thoughts flew away like a flock of birds flying out of a tree when you fire a shotgun. You know, that's how he described it. The thoughts just flew away. They dissipated. And the mind was quiet. He says for the first time he understood what peace of mind is. The mind was completely quiet. He describes it as being like the infinite blue sky with no clouds. And then, after the mind was quiet, he began to get pulled into the heart and from there into the void where the world disappeared. And again, this is what Ramana Maharshi is saying. When will the world, which is the object seen, be removed? When the mind, which is the cause of all cognitions and of all actions, we could also say the cause of all perception, right? Or the cause of the world. When the mind, which is the cause of all cognitions and of all actions, becomes quiet, the world will disappear. And so again, this is something that we practice for. And of course, one of the things that we have been doing recently is re-listening to the Elie Ruzdar audio. And Elie Ruzdar says this is the purpose of meditation. In her mind, the purpose of meditation is to quiet the mind. The purpose of meditation is to get to that point where the mind becomes quiet. And she, the way she says it, and then you can see who you are. Right? And the way Ramana Maharshi might say it is the mind becomes quiet, the world disappears, and then you can see who you are. She might just be leaving out that little in between the world disappears part in her speaking. The mind becomes quiet, the world disappears, and then you see who you are. You see the true self. And so again, if we're on the path of practice rather than the path of desperation, this is what we're practicing for. Sharon has asked, Regina, do you feel this happens to people who claim awakening? I don't think all people who claim awakening have actually experienced this, no. I think some people are claiming awakening before they've experienced it. And in fact, one of the things that Steve Ford says in the audio is you don't know what you don't know. So some people have probably experienced some shifts. I mean, I've experienced definite shifts. You know, the way that I see, the way that I think, the way that I experience is entirely different, dramatically different from when I started the spiritual path. And I'm certain that there are other people who have just as much dramatic change in the way they see. And you know, I would say they're probably in a culture where then it becomes appropriate to claim awakening. But they have not yet gone through the eye of the needle. And, you know, as I've said a million and one times, it seems like it is not my intention to claim awakening until I know I have gone through that eye of the needle. And the way it's being described, this is something you would know. You won't have a question in your mind, oh, am I awake? You will know if this has occurred, right? There's not going to be a doubt there. But my point is, this is why we practice awareness watching awareness. This is why we practice. Yeah, you wouldn't have to brag about it either. I agree. But this is why we practice, because as Elie Ruzdar says, you know, we're getting to the point where we bring that mind to quietness. And then as Ramana Maharshi says, when that mind goes genuinely quiet, not just a brief pause in the thoughts, but genuinely quiet, the world disappears because the mind makes the world. So when we get to the point where the mind goes genuinely quiet, the world disappears, which people often describe as the void. And by allowing ourselves to be pulled into that void, past the fear of death, we see ourselves as who we are, the Absolute. Isn't it wonderful that I woke up to this audio this morning or this video this morning when I said, yeah, I just think it's like a joke. Because, of course, I was just talking about waking up from the night's sleep. You know, last night I went to sleep a little later here because I hope someday you get to be in Pueblo West on July 4th because people will go out and buy very expensive. People must spend thousands of dollars, I'm not kidding, on fireworks, on these big fireworks that, you know, prior to me moving here, only cities had. But here people have them. And they just fire them off everywhere. You go outside, there's just these huge fireworks everywhere. It sounds like war from inside the house. Outside, it's just incredible. But they do that till like 11 at night or so. So even though I went to bed around 10 or so, you know, it sounded like a war zone outside. So I didn't fall asleep, you know, I don't know what time, but I didn't fall asleep as early as I normally do by any stretch of the imagination. So this morning when I woke up, my eyes were just heavy, like I needed help waking up. Because I really hadn't had as much sleep as I normally get, right? So my eyes were heavy, and I just said, you know, I need help waking up. And look what was given. You know, all of this clarity. We have more clarity, I feel, reading from Ramana Maharshi today after receiving the gift of this Steve Ford video than we probably would have if things had not occurred in this way. And this is what I call the grace of God, which, by the way, is my workbook lesson for the day, claiming the grace of God, right? I'm not going to go into the next paragraph. We only have a minute left, and it's a pretty long paragraph. So let me just review 4, 5, 6, and 7 in the minute that we have left. So question number 4, when will the realization of the true self be gained? When the world, which is what is seen, has been removed, there will be realization of the self, which is the seer. Question number 5. Will there not be realization of the self even while the world is there? Answer, there will not be. Question number 6. Why? The seer and the object seen are like the rope and the snake. Just as the knowledge of the rope, which is the substrata, will not arise unless the false knowledge of the illusory serpent goes. So the realization of the true self, which is the substrata, will not be gained unless the belief that the world is real is removed. Question number 7. When will the world, which is the object seen, be removed? Answer. When the mind, which is the cause of all cognitions and of all actions, becomes quiet, the world will disappear. So I hope you all enjoy tomorrow's workbook lesson when you get to look at this a little more. All right, I'm releasing the mic.